ready? Hey, you think you could tell us what to do? You think you could tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters. Break it down!
From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
I don't think I will have a career after this. I'm going to be honest. He broke me. He broke. And then I was like, no, this isn't right. It's just not right. And I apologized because that was the right thing to do and I meant it. And then I saw the tide turning and I saw what they were doing. And I went, oh, okay, they're trying to spin this and they're making it about Baron. And obviously that was never my intent. I would never want to hurt anyone, much less a child. But I started to see what was really happening. And then it was a mob mentality pile-on. And so many people have expressed to me personally across the country at my shows, they're scared. So, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to get arrested today. I don't know.
But I have to stand up.
Yeah, bring the music back up, Tyler. Come on. And we are back on the Blitz. Hour number two, 713-780-ESPN if you want to get in. 713-780-3776. You can also hit us up on the Blitz Facebook page. Find the Blitz, click like, you're good to go. There's also Twitter, at Fred Fowler, at Jon Snow with a zero, not an O, at Producer T. Scott, at Degenerates 975. You can also text the show, 713-780-3776. And John Lee filling in today. I think a very good first hour. That was Kathy Griffin.
You know what gets me triggered, Fred?
Oh, you're a trigger person?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Kathy Griffin gets me triggered.
Why so?
So, for the people that haven't seen the actual video or the photo, I'm sure everyone's seen it, but in the actual behind-the-scenes photo, she kind of says, hey, you know, we're going to get in a lot of trouble for this, and we're going to have to apologize and do all this stuff. And now she's playing the victim card. She's coming out and saying that... I don't know how you can play the victim after what you just did.
No, that is disgusting. You know what this reminds me of? And I don't know if this has happened with you and Teresa yet, but you get into a fight and she's completely wrong. Okay. She's in the wrong. And you point out that she's in the wrong. So what does she do? She starts crying. I'm telling you, this happens. This happens in arguments.
I'm sure it does.
And it will at some point. You're going to be like, she stayed out all night. It's probably completely innocent, but you said, hey, you could have texted her something. And it's like, well, I was doing this and this and this. And then at some point, when you're right on every point and she's losing the argument, she starts crying.
So that's
essentially what she did. I screwed up and I was trying to get attention and I got attention I don't want. So now I'm going to cry.
Now, I call BS on that. She knew exactly how much attention she was going to get. And she's just playing this up for, since she got let go from CNN. And I think she's just playing this up so she can stay in the spotlight. And from that initial video, I want to go back and say, if you watch that again, she'll say that she knows how much trouble she's going to get for this. And now she just, she knows damn well how much trouble she was going to get for this.
You know what this is? When was the last time anybody ever mentioned anything about Kathy Griffin?
Maybe once a year during New Year's.
Yeah, she does the New Year's show.
Yeah, you know how stupid Kathy Griffin looked last night? Or you know how stupid she sounded? That's the only time you ever, see or hear about Kathy Griffin. Give me a break.
832 says, time for some baseball talk. What starting pitcher should the Astros go for in free agency to make a legit World Series run? There's free agent pitchers out there right now?
I could check for you.
No, I think he meant in trade, which we've talked about a bunch. With the same names that we've been mentioning now for a month. So until they do something or until one of those guys gets moved somewhere, there's no real reason to dive back into that. 713-780-ESPN is your number, 713-780-3776. And they get your beloved Rangers this weekend. So there is that. There's your Astros.
And I didn't check the standings for a while now. I mean, I checked it this week, but before then, I was like, man, the Rangers are playing great. This is before they started losing again, but I was like, man, the Rangers are playing great. And I look up and like, they're only one game above 500 at the time. And I think now they're in third place, game below 500. I'm like, the Astros would need to choke tremendously to lose this division. And I don't know if that's going to happen. I can see them struggling if their pitchers don't, you know, remain healthy. But it's going to be very hard for this team to let up, I think.
I'll say what I've been saying for months, and I haven't changed my mind. For them to be successful in the playoffs, they're going to need a third top-line starting pitcher. They don't have that right now. That's a trade they'll have to make, and I think they will. And if they're smart, they'll get two, because there's no guarantee all these guys are going to be healthy. But you do that, you're a World Series contender. And, you know, I love the lineup. I love everything about it. That's what they're going to need moving forward. And somebody had asked me on Twitter today, would you trade a Bregman or something like that? They don't need to. They've got enough prospects that are pretty good prospects that are AAA and AA that should pull them a nice haul in a pitcher. You know, whether it's either one of the Tuckers, you know, you still got A.J. Reed down there. And they've got, you know, Colin Moran's a guy you might be able to move. They've got some guys on the farm that they can move, and I think they will, and I think they should. Lamont points out, you're a rookie. You don't know about wives playing the crying card. Got to ease them into that. That's like years 3 to 5. That's true. But Ike says he's met 4 crazies, and what the heck's wrong with him? I think that's just normal, Ike.
Speaking of crazy, I don't know if you've seen this exchange between, not an exchange, but Meiko Grimes. She's gone a little crazy again.
Yeah, that's another one who likes attention.
So do you want to do this? Do you want to? I can
read it.
Okay, so let's see. Greg Rosenthal, he works for NFL.com. He wrote this story about Tampa. So this is, if you want the whole thing, you can go to Barstool Sports. They have a little rundown of everything here. He wrote a little piece on Tampa Bay. He said, in the Grimes media power rankings, Meiko topped Brent last season for headlines, despite Brent turning in one of the most randomly dominant seasons over for an aging cornerback. Expecting Grimes to back that up at 34 years old is unfair, and the Bucs are very thin after their starters at the position. So Meiko goes to Twitter and says, how you cover the NFL and the only thing you can come up with about the Bucs is his wife made more highlights when I clearly didn't. And she tagged Greg Rosenthal. And then she goes on to say, how many times are you F-boys like Greg Rosenthal gonna say Brent Grimes will be washed up next year for sure with no proof, bitch! Exclamation mark and question marks. And then she comes out and says, wanna see some highlights, bitch? Here you go. And then she posted some stats of Brent Grimes being graded as one of the top corners in the league, the top corner in the league in some of these games against, I think it was against the Panthers, and I think a couple of other stats. She screenshotted stats. She says, you're a bleeping bleep, meow. You're a bleeping meow. Learn how to cover a team, watch film, bitch, and keep my man's name out of your bleeping mouth and mine, F-boy, at Greg Rosenthal. And she's not there. She's not done, by the way. She goes on and says, you got to be stupid MF-er to highlight the Bucks with Grimes will be washed or your highlight for the season. Eat bleep, bitch. And then finally, she says, leave
just riveting stuff from her, really.
I know. In all caps, she says, leave my man the F alone. He is quietly disrespecting everybody, but all y'all want to say he is washed up. F y'all. I almost cursed there. Suck my bleep.
She has one?
I didn't know.
I didn't either. That's the news. You buried the lead, John. She has a bleep.
She has a bleep. And so, and I think we're on a theme here of crazy people on the show today. And she's one of them.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of great, crazy stories. Getting back to the Kathy Griffin thing, obviously she did this as a publicity stunt, and she's milking it for all it's worth.
Oh, yeah.
And that's all Meiko Grimes is doing, too. She's just milking it for all it's worth.
I think she's actually crazy.
No, I think she is a little bit, but You know, she's like old man Ball. If you just ignore her, maybe she'll go away.
Maybe.
But, oh well. Dustin wants to know, what's the status on the whiskey? I think we're all doing pretty well here.
I think, what, you're on your second, well, second pour?
I refreshed it a little bit. It wasn't quite a full pour, but yeah, you need to catch up a little, because as usual, I put more in mine than everybody else's, because, you know, I drink a little more.
Yeah.
But good stuff. He also says the pre-cry look is the worst because you know the waterworks are coming and nothing can stop it. Yeah, I won't say which wife it was, but I had one that was a professional at that. I mean, it was like, if I was right about anything, this one I'm just never right with, so I don't even try. But that one, if I was right about something, you'd get that pre-cry look, and the next thing, just Niagara Falls, and then you feel like the perfect piece of bleep.
I mean, over the course of our relationship, me and Teresa's relationship, I think I thought coming into this relationship that I was pretty understanding, and I am pretty, like, I was self-aware of stuff. But being in this relationship, she's pointed out several times that how self-aware I'm not. She would ask me to do a couple of things, and I'd forget. And a lot of times when we do argue, it is my fault. And I'm not saying that because she's probably listening right now, but I'm not saying that because...
Oh, she's listening, and you're kissing up now. Shame, Bell.
No. Well, I am kissing up, but she is usually right, though. She is usually right, and I haven't gotten to a point where she fake cries or anything like that, so...
You will. You will. It's still a new relationship.
Fairly.
Yeah. Let's squeeze in a quick phone call before we go to break. Mike. What's up, Mike? Mike.
Hello.
All right. Well, he wasn't there.
That even wasn't my fault. I even had the phone turned up and on, so it's all Mike's fault.
My ex tried to break into my apartment when I had a girl I was seeing over, then stayed in my parking garage and waited for us until the morning. It was not pretty. Yeah.
You can do more of this crazy girl story.
Yeah,
after.
let's save a little bit of that, okay. Because we got a lot of stuff I want to get to, and then we got RJ at 5:30.
All right.
I'm kind of curious. This ought to be fun. I want to see you interview RJ.
I might just
stay out of
no,
it.
No, don't do that.
Well, I'll jump in if you start choking.
Okay, thanks.
But yeah, I'd kind of like to see that. Deacon says there's no way Kathy Griffin wanted this kind of attention. She's losing all her stand-up gigs and endorsements.
What did you expect when you were doing that?
Well, that's the thing. You knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
How good is her stand-up career before this?
Have you seen a Kathy Griffin special before or a stand-up?
No. And, you know, she's a redhead. I would like her ordinarily. But, no. So he says, even an unfunny joke about killing someone doesn't deserve sincerely scary death threats in return. That's fair, but the reality is... Death threats in general are dumb, and people get them for a lot sillier reasons than that. I've had death threats. I don't, you know, and whether or not you take them seriously or not, that's kind of up to you. But, you know, she knew what she was getting into. All right. 713-780-ESPN is your number if you want to get in. And, guys, Father's Day is coming. What do dads love? Steak. Who doesn't love steak? Who doesn't love a big chunk of meat that tastes fantastic? Well, we got the perfect Father's Day gift. Let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how this Father's Day, for only $59.99, you can get this limited time Father's Day package. How about this? Go to omahasteaks.com, enter code FRED in the search bar, and that'll apply the savings. And guess what? You're going to get 68% off Omaha Steaks Father's Day packages. Here's what it includes. You get a choice, either a huge 30-ounce T-bone, which I don't know how many you could feed with that, but a bunch, or 4 6-ounce tender filet mignons, 4 all-beef Omaha Steaks ground beef sliders, 4 award-winning gourmet jumbo franks, 4 potatoes au gratin, a 2-pound premium New York cheesecake, a jar of signature steak seasoning, plus you can get 4 additional ground beef sliders for free. So you can get this for dad and then just have a cookout on Father's Day. Crank all that up. The whole family's taken care of. Again, get this limited time package for only $59.99 when you go to omahasteaks.com, type FRED in the search bar, and add a Father's Day package to your cart. Don't wait. This offer ends soon. Go to omahasteaks.com, type FRED in the search bar, grab your dad, and fire up the grill.
This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we're back on The Blitz. No A.J. today. Jong filling in. So, when you get 8 years into marriage, you wonder if you're getting good gifts. I showed you what I got her for our anniversary, right?
No, you did not.
I got her an authentic Astros jersey with her name on the back and number 8 for 8 years.
Oh, nice.
I thought it'd be kind of different, right?
Yeah,
you,
yeah.
Do you think that'll fly?
I think it'll... I mean, it depends on what you did for the first 7 years.
Well, I've always come up with something pretty good. I did this once before. For 4 years, I got her a Saskatchewan Rough Riders jersey with her name on the back.
Uh-huh.
And number 4, because that was her favorite player, was Darian Durant, and he was number 4.
Okay.
But it had her name. So that... I did it once before, and she loved it. But I kind of thought, you know, Astros are doing great. Yeah, and there wasn't... I didn't want to get her another Rough Riders jersey because that's going to be Vince Young, and what if he sucks?
Uh-huh.
So I fell on this. It was either going to be that or I found a pretty cool... but she's got Texan stuff. She's got a couple Astros things, so it was either going to be that or the Jays. And I said, all right, no, we're in Houston. I'm going to get her an Astros jersey.
Has she adopted the Astros as her team, or
yeah,
is she, it still the Jays?
Well, she is a Jays fan first. But she loves the Astros. She's adopted them. She's adopted all the Houston teams.
That's good.
You should have got her a matching samurai sword like what you have.
You need to bring that in one day because I really want to see it.
I'm going to.
I want to see your samurai sword.
Well,
not that way, but no, I want to see the one that
you know
your
what?
Daughter...
Save that because I shouldn't tell this story, but I'm going to. It's funny because the guy next to me was having air conditioning problems last week.
Uh-huh.
And the
Did
guy,
your whole area lose AC?
No, well, it's just me and my neighbor, apparently. But so the guys are working on it all day, and I see them out there. And our places look the same. They're basically the same layouts, right? It's those three-story townhome things where... And this poor little guy gets confused. And for some reason, my wife had left the front door unlocked. I don't know why.
Uh-oh.
So he walks in to the front door, and I'm half awake. I'm on the couch. I was kind of taking a nap. And I hear the alarm go off, and I look up, and it's noon. I'm like, well, there's no way anybody's coming in that door at noon. And then I go, well, maybe Val's coming home for lunch. I'm trying to wake up. And suddenly the dog freaks out. And she's like, rawr, rawr, you know, and she's a pretty big dog. And so she starts hauling ass down the stairs. So me and my... half-awake slumber, run over, grab my samurai sword, pull the sword from the sheath, and start running down the stairs. And there's this poor little guy who's maybe 5 feet tall.
What are you wearing at the time? Because I want to kind of...
I shouldn't tell you that. All I had on was underwear and a t-shirt.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so this poor guy just... he opened the wrong door, and it was just an honest mistake. And as soon as he sees the dog coming, his eyes just get huge. And then he sees... the 6'3" guy with a samurai sword in his underwear flying down the stairs behind the dog. And I felt so bad later because I can't imagine what that must have looked like. But I guarantee you the poor guy will never open the wrong door again. Because, yeah, I was flying after him with a samurai sword.
I think there have been stories about people walking in into the wrong apartment and stuff to where, like, they've been killed. I think last year, Pelicans guard Bryce Dejon Jones mistakenly went into a stranger's apartment and got killed. So he was lucky that he didn't get anything chopped off.
Well, I mean, I was just trying to chase him out of there. But it was just, as I said, it was an honest mistake. And I'll in all honesty, I don't know how she forgot to lock the door because we always keep the doors locked. And we've got, you know, we got surveillance cameras and all that, so it's not that big a deal. I wasn't like, I felt more bad for him later because that dog can look pretty mean when she wants to.
Yeah. What kind of dog?
She's
I've seen your dog. It's pretty big.
Yeah, she's about 70 pounds. She's half Rhodesian Ridgeback, and my wife keeps saying half boxer, but I think she's got a little pit in her.
Uh-huh.
And you know, she was a rescue dog, so we don't really know the whole thing. But when she wants to look mean, now she's not mean. She'll like bare her teeth and run after you, and then she'll stop.
Start licking you.
Yeah, yeah. But as soon as that door popped, man, she goes flying down the stairs. I'm like, okay, this isn't good. And so, yeah, I'm following her, and I'm like, okay, I can't imagine what that looked like for some poor guy who's down at the bottom of a flight of stairs. So I must have looked about 7 feet tall at the top of it. The dog must have looked 5 feet tall.
And you're up there with your whitey tighties and your underwear.
Well, they weren't whitey tighties. No, they were kind of like boxers. So they didn't.
Boxers. But like, if you're, imagine you're that guy, you open the door and you see a giant man, a 6'3" man on top of the stairs with a samurai sword, at the top of the stairs in a t-shirt and his boxers.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, did this guy break into my apartment with a samurai sword and nothing but boxers on? Or did I just, am I in the right spot?
Yeah, I think he figured out real quickly that it was the wrong door. And regardless, I felt bad later.
I have a feeling this is going to turn into like one of those Blitz tall tales.
What do you mean?
Like we have, I mean, it's just going to turn into one of those stories that, you'll reference like the pepper spray incident, all that stuff, but you're basically the Blitz Paul Bunyan.
Well, the thing is and plus you know how it is when you first wake up and you don't really know what the hell's going on.
Oh yeah, you're groggy.
Yeah. So if you just imagine being in your place and you hear the alarm go off and you know somebody's not supposed to be in there, I mean your first reaction is, well, I'm gonna grab the nearest weapon. It just happened to be the sword. My piece was in the other room, so I or else it would have been that. That would have been even worse. But yeah,
we had this recently at one of Teresa's friends' house where we're just doing a crawfish boil, and then a couple of her friends already left, and I guess we didn't lock the door. And we're playing around, drinking, and playing board games, and then we hear that beep coming in.
Yeah,
we're like, we look around, we're like, everyone's here. We all kind of freeze, and they don't keep any guns or anything in the house. So we kind of freeze, and we kind of peek over at the front door, and it happened to be one of the friends that left a couple hours ago that forgot something at the house, and we just froze. And I keep telling myself, you know, when something like that happens, I would actually go and grab something as a weapon, but I completely froze at the moment, and I just... And if you're not in the moment when you can tell yourself you're going to do this and this and this when this
right.
actually happens. But in the moment, you're kind of like, oh, crap. And yeah. I completely froze.
Well, and I have different weapons for each floor of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on where I am, if something happens, like I've got a gun. I've got a baseball bat. I've got a samurai sword. I've got tons of pepper spray in places. So I've always got something somewhere in case something like this happens. This is the first time anything like that's actually happening. It wasn't, yeah, I don't know that the samurai sword was the best choice, but it was the closest choice.
Although I would say if I saw a full grown man with a samurai sword, I'd be really scared. And I don't know if I'd be more scared of a gun or a samurai sword.
I think samurai sword would probably scare me.
The samurai sword would be like WTF.
Oh, and I had my best crazy ass eyes working too. Mm. Where I had the you know, the wide eyed, I'm going to kill something.
Sure.
Yeah, because that's what you do, right? All right, quick break. RJ Bell up next. It's The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. Real quickly, Lauren says she's got pistols sitting all over the house just in case, but she's an Aggie. You're supposed to have that. And Tim says he's not a gun guy, but he wanted to get something, so he's totally buying a samurai sword. I didn't get the sword for that purpose. It was a gift. It just happened to be the closest thing when I thought somebody was breaking into my house.
Well, Raheel says you have a different weapon on every floor. You're the 1%.
Actually, I got more than one weapon on every floor. All right, enough of that. Let's Let's go to the greatest gambling guru in the history of the known universe and our good friend RJ Bell. RJ, guess who's filling in for AJ today? Jong Lee has stepped up to the majors. So I was telling him he has to interview you the entire way.
I don't think that would work out. You know, I can carry him. Let's try it.
Yeah, I just want to see how – I want to test his interview skills against, with somebody who knows what they're doing. So
I got to be honest with you. It's painful to be on – you know, occasionally on the weekends I'll do – you know, it's funny. You would think like a national show on the weekends would still have eight guys, right? But I found the big cities like Houston have much better hosts, you know, typically than, let's say, a national network on the weekend. – And sometimes it's just they ask a question and you're kind of cringing, and then you kind of answer something that's totally different than what they asked, just so it makes some sense. So maybe we should just avoid that.
RJ, I know my lane, the reason why I am in this spot right now is that the guy that I did have filling in for AJ was he had to go see a doctor for the last minute, and we couldn't find anybody else. So I'm kind of here by default.
Now, are you going to be able to tweet out a photo of that note from the doctor?
It was an email. It was not a note.
But did the doctor send the email?
No. It was the fill-in.
So the person who just didn't show up said, "Oh, I'm sick. I'm at the doctor's."
Well, he works here every day he doubles as a sales guy. And he does a Sunday show on the weekends. So
I'm a little skeptical.
Yeah, I am too, because I did the show with him yesterday, and I think I just scared him off. So,
like, you set the bar so high, it's like, wow.
Yeah, or so low. I'm
not
sure.
You're in trouble, buddy.
Hey, I have a stat I want to throw at you that a guy wrote for my website today is a really sharp gambler, and going to the NBA game last night. And of the last 20 times the Cavs and Warriors have met in the regular season and playoffs, they've gone under 220 19 out of 20 times. And the total was 226 in game one. It's down to 222 now. That's a pretty significant trend. And why is it that I guess because they have so many superstars, people just assume that the games are, there's going to be a lot of points scored, but both these teams are pretty decent on defense too. Would you keep following that? I mean, we're 19-1 now, even at 222, that's still under 220. Or do you see the game going differently in game two?
Well, first let's question a few of the premises here. I don't think Cleveland's pretty good on defense. Right, I think Golden State's a top five team on defense, and I think Cleveland's below average on defense, and that's the difference between these teams, right? Where I think offensively, as much as those threes and the offense is so impressive, it almost becomes kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy where you think, okay, it's the way they can shoot, it's Durant, and then you watch the game and you see him make a couple of threes and say, yeah, that's it. But really, Golden State offensively, obviously very good, but having a really, really good offense with a really, really good defense is what makes Golden State so good. And I think unequivocally that's not the case with Cleveland. I also think shifting gears here. Now, do you agree or disagree with that?
No, I agree.
All right, cool. Now, the next thing I would say is that Wise Guys, and we did our dream podcast on Wednesday, and I think it's very pertinent because both the Wise Guys were heavy on Golden State. So I think the rationale we shared before game one is going to seem even more right on, I think, accurate than even, you know, after game one. So I would consider giving that a listen if you're interested. But we did a deep dive that Wise Guys have gotten crushed, lost big time playing unders throughout the playoffs. And the theory has been, hey, a disproportionate amount of games have gone over. The market has adjusted for that. And the Wise Guys have felt like it was an aberration. You know, randomly, you're going to have more overs than unders sometimes. And the market reacted like there was a fundamental change and moved up the over-unders by 5-6 points. And if you actually look at Golden State Cleveland last finals versus this year, the market was up, I think, upwards of 10 points. If I'm remembering correctly, it was in that, you know, high two in the teens, you know, 217, 18. And then, as you said, it was in that 226 range. So I think there was some real questions about, was this inflated? Are these totals inflated? But on the other hand, throughout the entire playoffs, they kept going over. So then you've got to start wondering, Am I being contrarian and getting value, or am I missing out on a fundamental change? So looking at the playoffs in the NBA in a macro global sense, I think that's still uncertain. One game under doesn't change that for me. Now, looking at this matchup, I find that particularly intriguing because let's think about it. Six games and then seven games in the finals the last 2 years before this year. And then, you know, two games a year regular season. So that's four. So you're looking at 17. So you're, and then that's extending back to the prior final. So really that number of 20 games or so actually goes back to, it sounds like, the midpoint of the finals 3 years ago. Is that right?
Yeah, 2014-15 is the time frame.
So I guess to me, I like that because usually 20 games in the NBA when you're out of conference, you know, it's going to be upwards of 10 years, right? If you're only playing two games a year, the fact that this is a handful of years and the teams are pretty similar, obviously Durant's here now, I think that's a very telling stat.
RJ Bell, our guest. So the number has jumped to 9. I was all over Golden State in game one. Is this one where you come back with the Cavs at plus 9, or are your guys still on Golden State?
This 9 is very surprising. So we talk about this throughout the entire NBA playoffs, the zigzag.
Right.
Now, the theory of the zigzag is when a team does really well in one game, look to play their opponent the next game. And the rationale is the team that did really well might be just a little lackadaisical, like, yeah, we got this. The team that got embarrassed is like, we've got to do something to redeem ourselves. So the intensity goes up. And they might make some game plan changes, which in theory, if you played really poorly, some changes are have upside, right? It seems like if you do the same thing, there's no upside. So now there's a chance the changes are going to help. And lastly, it's the idea that there's a premium on the team that looked really good. And thus, typically, I would have expected, if you would have told me before the series started, Golden State's going to win, be 7 in game one, favored by 7, and win easily. If you would say, what's the line in game two? I would have guessed 6.5, meaning the zigzag would have brought it down
right.
A little bit. The fact that Golden State looks so good and the fact that the finals has such a high percentage of public money, recreational money, that overreact to what they saw most recently, this line going up to 9 without injury is literally shocking. I mean, I could have thought, oh, they look so good. Maybe it's 7.5. To go from 7 to 9, I mean, how often does Golden State, I mean, you really, if you went back and looked at Golden State favored by 9 at home, you're going to see that against teams, you know, in the regular season like Utah. And I mean, this is just total. I mean, this means that Golden State's going to be favored on the road. I mean, assuming Golden State wins this game too, it looks like they'll be like a 1-point favorite at Cleveland. I mean, imagine the Cavs in the finals being in a home underdog. I mean, it's that much adjustment. To me, it feels like too much adjustment. And as much as I like Golden State before the series, and we talked about it on the Dream Pod, it's something where I feel like 2 points, when in theory Cleveland has the advantage now because of the zigzag, that feels like too much. So I would certainly lean Cavs in game two.
RJ, it came out, I think, today that Steve Kerr was thinking about coming back for game two. How much is he worth, if anything, and where do you think he ranks in terms of how important he is to the team in the NBA?
You know, that's actually a good question.
Good job, Fred, John.
Give him an A-minus on that one.
All right.
Because the second part of that question was key. I'm going to answer that first because then the surprise is going to be the answer to the first part. Right now, if you just polled Vegas wise guys, Pop is number one, and that's, you know, obvious and clear. Kerr would be number two, and Stevens would be number three, debating best coaches in the NBA. Now, here comes my answer. Kerr is worth between 0.25 points. Now, it's like, well, wait a minute. The second best coach? But he's only worth, you know, maybe nothing? Here's the key. If Kerr left town, let's say he had a murder beef, and he said, I'm going on the lam. So he has his go bag, and he takes his playbook with him, so they don't even know the plays anymore. Kerr's worth a ton, right? But here's the thing. They went through the whole preseason. They went through the whole season. He was there the whole time. Now, so they still got that system. And Golden State does a really good job of having a process, a system. And then you think about it. He's there in practice. He's traveling with the team. The only thing that's missing from this second-best coach in the NBA is not on the sidelines and not on the bench. And, yeah, that means something. But my gut feeling, and Fred, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, is, you know, that last piece of the puzzle, my gut feeling is that's about 20% of Kerr's value, and the 80% is all the other things he's still contributing. Does that split sound right?
It does sound right, and the thing is, if the games aren't going to be close, I think his value is even less. Because well, of the adjustments you're going to make in real time, we didn't really see that in game one. It didn't matter. So, and most of these games haven't been that close. So, no, I agree with you. I'd be curious what Popovich would be worth point-wise.
It'd be the same situation, though, right? If just at the last minute he wasn't going to be there,
right,
it would mean a ton less than if he retired. But even if he retired, there would still be that kind of a copy of a copy of a copy. Year one, he would still be having an effect on the team. Year two, a little less. You know, we saw it in with the Cowboys, right? Jimmy Johnson leaves. Right. And you know, a coach comes in, a college coach, that obviously not near as good, but they still win a Super Bowl. Some people would say the Steelers, you know, post Cowher in 2008 when they beat Arizona was kind of still a lot of Cowher influence, not just the players, but he, so I think in general, not excuse me, not being on the sidelines is the smallest piece of the puzzle.
Something else I found very interesting on your notes is the Vegas consensus on who would be most valuable player. And obviously Russell Westbrook's probably going to win it. But LeBron James, I think you could make the case every year, is the most valuable player. And you've got James and Leonard 1-2. What's the thinking behind that? Because AJ and I have talked about that a lot, that if you were to take LeBron James off that team, then that's the biggest impact in the league. So is that kind of what we're looking at here? Or are we looking at number of points per game that those guys – you know, wins over replacement, that kind of stuff. What goes behind that thought process?
In Vegas, it's all about what would the adjustment to the number be if this player was gone, you know, unexpectedly. And I think, does anyone really quite now here's where it gets a little bit complex. If a team is horrible, let's say the worst, the Browns, how much is Tom Brady worth to the Browns? You might make the case he's not worth very much because even with him, they're not going to win.
Right.
Right? And then the next question is, you know, if somehow you had a team with, you know, oh, well, here's a good example. What was Steve Young worth to the 49ers when Montana was there?
Versus,
very little.
Right.
Right. Because he didn't play.
And versus, so, well, what was Steve Young worth to the Bucks, which wasn't much when he first started there.
Yeah, but even when he, let's say, evolved and matured, is Steve Young might have been the third best quarterback. Even before he got a lot of reps, he might have been the third or fourth best quarterback in the league.
Right.
But he wasn't worth it. So there are extreme, but in general, it's remove a guy and what kind of effect are you going to have? And does anyone really want to make the case that removing LeBron wouldn't be the most impactful thing in or impactful player removal in the NBA? I mean, who could make that case? And thus, as long as that's the case, he's the most valuable player. He contributes the most to a team's chance to win. That's what value is. But obviously, the guys voting on the MVP, I mean, just the very fact Jordan didn't win every year for his 8 main years, right?
Right.
That's absurd, right? The fact that LeBron hasn't won every year since Kobe got old is absurd. And not only didn't he win, not a single person in the entire voting universe of MVP voters thought he was the most valuable. So this wasn't like, oh, there's, you know, 60% ignorant voters and 40% savvy. Every voter said Curry was the MVP, you know, his year that he, you know, obviously got all the votes.
Right.
So the idea of that is absurd. And Vegas disagrees strongly. And we would like, I would like to make a personal invite to those voters to come to Vegas to bet.
Yeah, because those guys, well, we know what they're about.
In your notes, you have Markelle Fultz being drafted number one at minus 700 and any other player at plus 500. I'm curious what the number is for the number two pick because the Lakers hold the number two pick, and a lot of people are saying they're going to take Lonzo Ball.
Uh-oh, D-plus. Well, yeah. I'm going to give that a D-plus. Because think about this. He's got pages and pages of notes. And he says, allow me to reference your notes, and then I'm going to ask you a question not in the notes. Come on, Fred. What kind of grade are you giving that?
I'm sorry.
No, but actually, there aren't odds out there for the number two. My gut feeling is as the draft gets closer, you might see that. You know, so my feeling just being a voracious consumer of the media, the sports media, is that – If Ball is there, if he doesn't go number one, it feels very likely the Lakers are going to take him, Ball at two. Now, you know, when the odds come out, I'd actually say this. If you said you're taking – I guess the way I'll say is this. I think the odds are better the Ball goes to the Lakers than it is that the Celtics take Fultz. So, but though there is a – the way I was pausing for a minute because there is a correlation there, right? Because obviously if they take Ball – the Celtics, the Lakers can't take them. But in general, I think that in both cases, Boston taking Fultz is very likely, and I think Ball being taken by the Lakers is very likely.
That's RJ Bell, pregame.com. And as a matter of fact, I'm gonna have something for you this weekend on pregame because I've been getting a lot of questions that the only horse tracks at night are pretty much quarter horses, which are kind of hard to bet on. So I'm going to put together something with some tips for how to bet these late-night tracks when you're in Vegas, and that's all that's going on. So.
And next week, we got the lead-up to the Belmont.
We got the Belmont. So, you know, we're gonna crush that thing. So
I'm redemption. This is Fred Fowler part three, redemption.
Oh, yeah, this is the redemption tour because, yeah, it's funny that I've gone into a little bit of a rough patch here. And it's right when we started doing this, which sucks, but we're going to bounce back in a big way. We only need to be right on one of these, and everybody's happy. So we will be.
I have no doubt. And we'll be doing a little tease ahead. We'll do a podcast preview the same way we did last time. A lot of great feedback. And really, for those – and I'm not sure how much you talk horse racing, but Fred, one of the most educated horse racing guys, in my opinion, out there. So I'm looking forward to it, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, we don't do a lot on the show here, but that's why I'm loving doing these podcasts with RJ, because we can really get into the thought processes behind it and how you approach these things and really dive in deep. So it's been fun doing those, and I'm looking forward to doing that again next week. And I might have a couple plays this weekend that I'll throw on the website. Yeah, I know he dropped. I'm just kind of finishing up what we were talking about there. So, all right, we got a little whiskey left. We got to finish this bottle. We stole it, right?
Yeah, we did. I'm almost done with mine.
Okay.
Well, let's use the word commandeered.
Commandeered, good word. Well, Tyler stole it.
Yes, Tyler commandeered the whiskey.
Yeah,
I did ask for permission first, but...
And you never heard from her?
I didn't hear from her. Well, I assume it was a yes.
So do I get a passing grade with RJ? Because I think he gave me an A- once and a D- once?
But see, I'm going to give you a better grade than that. Because RJ ought to know by now that we're not going to use his notes for the most part in our when he's on with us. We're going to ask him stuff that's, I mean, we might reference him, but then we'll try to take it to another level. And usually he likes it, right?
Yeah, I try to do that, but I guess he didn't like that too much.
He was just giving you grief.
Oh, I'm sure.
I thought you did great. So
thank you.
Although you only asked two questions. I was going to let you do the whole interview, but then I got selfish and wanted to ask some stuff myself. All right. We have the Zadok Jewelers Gym of the Day coming up next. It's The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. Fred Fowler and Jong Lee today with Tyler running things from inside the box. Hey, the Stanley Cup Finals Game 4 is this Monday. Join The Blitz as we broadcast live at R-Bar. conveniently located in the Rice Military Area just off Memorial. Come out for great drink specials, including AJ's Special Brew, mint chocolate stouts for $3, and great wings from Big City Wings. So basically, there's another diet-blowing day because I'll be drinking beer and wings.
Game two is actually tomorrow on ESPN 975.
It's on our station. It's on the big station.
Yes, it is.
That's awesome.
Yep.
So are the rest of them on ESPN 975, or is there
only
any?
Only the ones on the weekends, and the other ones are going to be on 1560.
Okay. So this is the time you'll want to listen to hockey.
Yes.
When it's on 97.5. Otherwise, watch it. Same thing with the finals you should listen to. Real quickly, Fred, your question on LeBron versus Leonard for MVP. I would ask, look at the lead the Spurs had in Golden State in game one. If he gets hurt and they lose, LeBron was healthy and they look just as bad to Golden State. I would lean towards Leonard. That's not fair.
I don't think that's fair.
Well, that's not enough of a sample size. You can't take one half of one basketball game, basically, and use that as your measuring stick. What the hell was that?
What was that?
That was my bad. I had a netcom still up.
That was your bad, definitely. But what the hell was it is what I want to know.
It was the song that you were going to play?
Song, yeah.
But if I had a vote for this season, I would have voted for James Harden. But I think I agree with Vegas. I think LeBron should win every year. But I think the way that the Rockets finished the season being third in the West – and also, James and Russell weren't too far off in terms of stats. I would have voted for James, but I think Russell's going to win.
You know what the hard part is? You can't really judge unless one of those guys is out for half a season.
Yeah.
If the Rockets are playing 700 basketball and then James Harden gets hurt and they play 300 basketball, then that's a significant change. And I think if LeBron's out, same thing. They have to be out for an extended period of time for you to be able to judge that fairly. And if those guys are that good, you don't want that.
Yeah, and the counter argument to that is if those players are out for X amount of time, let's say they're out for 20 games, then you have the argument of they can't win MVP because they've missed so much time.
Not in that particular season, but I think that's how you judge their real value. Guy's out for half the year, and what is their record with him? What is their record without him? That's enough of a sample size. Even a quarter of a season is not enough of a sample size. You can get a few guys hot and playing well for 25 games and win. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. But, all right, let's do the Zadok Jewelers Gem of the Day.
The Gem of the Day. It's the Gem of the Day. The Zadok Jeweler Gem of the Day.
All right, one of my favorite things that they do on Barstool Sports is they rank the teacher-student sex scandals. And we've got a good one here from Pennsylvania.
Like good as in like hot?
No, not good as in attractive. Good as in juicy. Actually, very juicy.
Juicy as in like the teacher was juicy? Like,
well, she's
a little hefty?
Well, she's a little hefty. But that's not how I meant juicy. I just meant the details of this are very juicy.
Okay.
Kelly Aldinger was ordered in December
Dinger.
To serve 3 to 23 months in a county jail after admitting to institutional sexual assault. She got caught in her car with a 17-year-old boy who was one of her students.
Okay.
And, she managed to get a very favorable sentence. Oh, you know what? Are we too far over here? Do we need to go to break and then we'll finish this when we come back?
We are definitely over.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. All I'll say is this involves a cemetery.
Oh.
And some other stuff. And that'll be a tease to finish the Gem of the Day when we come back. Right now, we're going to go to break. We'll be right back. It's the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.